A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to episode 100 of the Niler 9 podcast. Woo-woo! Oh, hold on. It's time. I've had this on my phone for that long that it's about time I use this. It is the...
Unbelievable.
Episode 100.
Here we are.
Well, it's myself and Andrea back once again. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited for this very special moment in our lives. 100 episodes.
Hitting a century is always nice.
It is.
Well, last week we did not know what we were going to be doing, but it soon became clear last Friday which album we'd be talking about. On this episode, we're going to be basically talking about Taylor Swift's 8th album, Folklore, which was surprise released with very short notice last Friday, produced by Aaron Dessner of The National. It is a strikingly different album for Taylor Swift, and one that we will be getting into as our album of the week, and we'll also have songs of the week as well. But first, what's been going on in terms of internet music news and the live music industry? Obviously, the last few weeks we've been talking a lot about the live music industry and the lack of gigs and the restrictions in place. At the moment, though, a lot of the conversations are actually about the idea that the live music sector needs to be supported in Ireland by the government directly, or it's going to completely fail altogether. I don't know. Did you watch any of the songs from Empty Room on Saturday?
I did. I didn't catch all of it, but I caught, I caught about half an hour, 45 minutes of it. It was absolutely brilliant. I think it was a real showcase for, you know, the potential that we have for a primetime slot for Irish music on RTE. I think it could absolutely work. I don't see why we can't commission people to do this more often, in the pandemic or otherwise. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole broadcast was there to raise money for workers in the live music event industry, the likes of Picture This, Gavin James, Soleil, James Vesmacmore, the Croners, the Coronas, Denise Chyla, Mother, and more were there. But a lot of the stories in the back in between, and a lot of the artists like Brezzy talking about the importance of their crew, the people who work on the front line of the back line, as they keep saying, you know, all these people that need to be supported. And then this week, you know, U2 donated 200,000 to the cause, and then a further 200,000 plus was donated. The Blizzards themselves donated $5,000 to these two funds, which is Mining Creative Minds, which is essentially a counselling service for people who work in the music business. And right now, there's a lot of people who work in the music business who currently are in ribbons about what they're supposed to be doing, where they're supposed to be. And the government isn't making it easy at the moment, because they have been essentially saying that if you are the kind of person who's working in an industry like the music industry, which has been the first to close and probably the last to reopen, then you're basically, as soon as the government came in 6 weeks ago, it was pretty much like battening down the hatches in terms of the pandemic unemployment payment. We started at 350 for everybody and is going to be reduced over time. Some people have got it reduced already to 203 per week based on their 2018 income revenue and stuff like that. But the big thing here is that, like, the whole point about this, they're going to reduce this from 350 to 300 to 250 to 203, depending on what you are in. But they also added a clause that says you have to be genuinely seeking work, which stuck in a lot of people's craw this week, because if you're in an industry that's not being told you're not allowed to work because of the public health regulations, are they expecting us to just fake off and leave an industry and then have nothing left? And it's that kind of, again, it's that level of
disdain for anybody who isn't in a job that has a pension and benefits and is on the straight and narrow. And these are the same people who would be like, oh, isn't it great to see normal people getting all those Emmy nominations? And it's like, well,
they were doing that today.
Yep, saw them at it.
Micheál Martin tweeting about that today. Yeah. And you're like, absolutely. Same thing, lads. God, same thing.
Did you read Una Mullally's piece on the Irish Times today about it?
No, I did not.
It's excellent. Fully recommend going to read it. You can feel the anger kind of coming off the page, or the, as it were. She puts it brilliantly. Because I'm actually too angry to even voice thoughts on it. I just can't believe that they can be this blasé about people's livelihoods.
I spent my entire week instead. Instead of writing about new music, I've essentially spent my entire week writing so far. It's now Wednesday. I spent every day writing about this stuff and why the industry is. But the same thing is like the same for myself. Say I'm a self-employed person. Anybody who's self-employed, you're kind of querying. They changed the wording on the eligibility for the pandemic unemployment payment. It used to say it has been significantly, if your trading income has been significantly reduced, and then suddenly yesterday it said if it has ceased. So it's like, okay, which is it? Mm-hmm. Like I rang my accountant today and he was like, look, they just keep changing it, we don't know what's going on. So we, like, you kind of have to operate as if, you know, take the work if there's some offer to you, but you know, but like you can't really get off the pup for now, like, as things are. It's not like, you know, this is the kind of ignorance again, is like, not you can't just turn back on a tap.
Yes.
Because it's not like you're going back into a workplace that suddenly starts up again. It's like self-employed people and people in the gig economy, or the crack economy as people are calling it this week. They, you know, these jobs don't come in like every week. They come in once off here and there, and then they build up over time, and that's how you make your living. And the very idea as well that you're conflating people who are on who have a very successful business who want to work with people who are on a job seeker's benefit, which is totally valid. It's just a lot of that stuff, like today with the announcement that 400,000 plus has been allocated from the Songs for Empty Room event to those funds. They've also, Epic, who put on the Songs from Empty Room, also asked to review the new restrictive amendments to the wage subsidy scheme, to review the impending reduction in the pandemic unemployment payment, which I just mentioned, and then other things, including the parameters that they keep amending. And there's a whole other thing about the people who are traveling abroad. It's a usual shit show. Again, we're 6 weeks into a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael joint Greens coalition, and it's already looking much more of a fiasco than I would have expected at this point, 6 weeks in.
It's pretty grim. It's pretty grim.
Who would you risk, Dre, of getting coronavirus to go see if you were given the option right now, this weekend, say?
It's only me getting the virus. I can't pass it on to anyone else. I can't become contagious. I just have to get the virus, is it?
Your risk, who would you risk getting this go in to see a band this weekend?
Beyonce.
Okay, will you settle for the chain smokers? Because 2,000 other people did. A charity concert happened on Saturday night in the Hamptons, that luxurious place, featuring performances from the chain smokers. And for some reason, and this, every report I've seen has said this, a DJ who was also a chief executive of Goldman Sachs. So this event has drawn like widespread outrage for the fact that...
I bet he's a banging DJ.
I'm sure
he
is.
I bet he's just really got his finger on the pulse.
DJ D-Sol, his name is David Solomon, so of course it's called D-Sol. So the event has drawn a lot of criticism, and it's now under public investigation from the New York Public Health because it didn't seem like there was a lot of social distancing going on. Now, look, get this. This sounds like something... like the fire festival is being put on in a small place in the Hamptons. The concert was called Safe and Sound, and it's billed as a drive-in
that alone.
Music billed as a drive-in music experience in the famous summer spot, the Hamptons, blah, 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 right? It was in a town of Southampton. The concert ticket package started at $850 and went up to $25,000, which if you did buy that VIP ticket, it would include an RV. All the profits apparently went to local charities, which is good. 2,000 people did actually attend it. It was produced by luxury travel and lifestyle agency In the Know Experiences and presented by a tequila brand. So of which the Chainsmokers are stakeholders in. This came out on Monday or over the weekend, and New York's health commissioner, Howard A. Zucker, wrote that he was greatly disturbed by reports showing that thousands of people standing close together and generally not adhering to social distancing guidelines. I'm at a loss at how the town of Southampton could be issued a permit for such an event, how they believed it was legal and not obvious public threat. In their response, some people who were at the chain smokers' gig said that there was barriers and restrictive boundaries inside the pit, which is where the videos that were shot showed. They said they had an amazing time and we hope to see more events like this. That's the Chainsmokers causing a ruckus.
Who would you risk going to see?
Right now...
Like the Beastie Boys is obvious.
But. Yeah, but I can't even do that, you know? Yeah. So like in real life, I'd probably just wait. I just want to go to a club. And have a dance.
No.
Like in a safe way. I want the experience. Like, I'm not saying in reality. I want that experience of being in a club without having to worry about the COVID stuff.
I'd like to be like quite close to the barrier at some kind of like heavy guitar based band's concert. Maybe like a girl band gig or something like that. I think that's...
Oh, that'd be good. Like, I have to say that the track they released last week, even though Amygdala, just a minute and 34 seconds of it, recorded live in Vicar Street last year, really brought me back to those gigs and how brilliant they were and how much I miss gigs again. But I do, we have reasons to be cheerful this week.
Yeah, we do.
I'm going to ask you what your reason to be cheerful is first.
Okay, mine's not music related. It relates to the Emmys, and so we haven't picked the same one though.
No.
So all of my lovely Succession boys and my one Succession girl were all nominated for Emmys, and so we're talking for lead roles. Logan and Kendall are both nominated, and then for supporting actor, Greg, Tom, and Kieran Culkin's character, what's his name? Romulus.
Roman.
And yeah, but it's short for Romulus. His father calls him Romulus. And I was just really happy about that because I, you know, just recently got into Succession and I think it's really good. And I actually think the Emmys lists this year are really, really strong. And Watchmen got a load of nominations as well, which I was chuffed about. So I was just like, yeah, my lads. And then Sarah Snook is nominated for Best Supporting Actress as well. So.
Very good.
That's my reason to be cheerful. And then I saw a headline that was like, Kieran Culkin says he'll punch Nicholas Braun in the balls if Succession co-star beats him for an Emmy. That made me smile.
Well, funny enough, my reason to be cheerful is also Succession related.
No, I don't want to hear it. I'm not listening to it. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. No, no, don't play it for me. I can't do it. I can't. No.
Listen, no. Andrea, just tell
the listener what it is, and I'll leave the room, and you can play it for them. But I'm not.
You can't make a tomlet without breaking a few Greggs, no. Okay?
I don't like when actors make music. I hate it.
Okay, so for context here, Nicholas Braun, who is cousin Greg,
I knew you'd do this. I'm so mad.
Yeah. Has a jokey song. It's a joke song, so it's
okay.
Okay,
that's good.
Yeah, it's a joke song. It's called Antibodies, Do You Have the parentheses? and it's all about the desperate search for love in the COVID era. And the lyrics include, if you come within 6 feet, it's mask on, mask on, mask on. But if you got antibodies, it's pants off, pants off, pants off. So this all came from Nicholas Braun's Instagram, where he was just like, I got an idea for a song. And he said it over Instagram. And then all of these other people who were following him started making the song. And then an A&R got in touch and was like, let's make the song. And he's like, okay. So now he's made the song.
Okay.
So are you going to leave the room?
I'm not going to listen to it. Okay, fine.
Come on. It's episode 100, birthday. Right?
Hey yes. guys, it's me, Nick. I've got this song idea. Maybe other people might want to do the music for it. The lyrics are kind of set. They are set. Okay, so it goes.
Do you have the antibodies?
I want a girl whose blood's got the stuff. I want a girl who's safe.
That's my reason to be fearful, is that I won't like the music of the actor who plays a character that I love, and then it will stop me loving the character.
I obey the rules. Now I'm ready to break them on you. No more sending nudes. If you come within 6 feet, it's mask on, mask on, mask on, mask on. But if you got antibodies, it's pants off, pants off, pants off, pants off. Do you have the antibodies? Do you want to be with me? Do you have the antibodies? Because if you don't, you better...
I'm done. I listened. Very good, Nicholas. Best look at the Emmys. Well done. Well done on your new song. I form like extreme parasocial relationships with fictional characters and the actors who play them. So when they step out and do something earnest in another, especially music, I find it really, really, really difficult to listen to their music. I think the only person whose music I've taken that risk and press play on and was rewarded was the guy who plays Steve in Stranger Things. I listened to his album and it's really great. It's actually really good. I would have liked it anyway. Someone who should be making music, that's my link, or someone who is making music is Taylor Swift, who's our album of the week this week. 100 episodes. We're really nailing it.
Yes, it is time for our album of the week. It is from Taylor Swift. It is called Folklore, surprise released last week, produced by Aaron Dessner mostly, and with Jack Antonoff as well. What song would you like to hear first?
What was the single on it?
Cardigan.
Yeah, let's hear Cardigan.
I felt like I was an old cardigan under someone's bed. Said I was your favorite. A friend to all is a friend to none. Chase two girls, lose the one. When you are young, they assume you know nothing. But I knew you playing
All right, that was Taylor Swift. The album is called Folklore, the 8th studio album, largely produced during lockdown in quarantine while she was in her house over remote recording with Aaron Dessner and a whole cast of musicians who he mostly brought in, and then also Jack Antonoff. There are 16 tracks on this. It's an hour, 63 minutes long. Jack Antonoff works on 1, 2, 3, 4... I think 6 songs on this, and then the rest are basically all Aaron Dessner of The National. It was a bit of a surprise, I guess, for a lot of people that this even existed. No one had really put 2 and 2 together in terms of the idea that Taylor Swift might be working with one of The National. So where do we start with it? I mean, it's kind of, it was billed as a folky album. It's folk-ish, I guess. The album, the album's seriousness is kind of telegraphed by the imagery on the front cover, black and white in the woods, all of that kind of stuff. Does it bear witness to that kind of idea? Is this an intimate folk album that a lot of critics, I would say, have been expecting from Taylor for a long, long time? They've been wanting this from her. How do you think? What were your first impressions of it?
So I suppose to the question, is this a folk album? No, it's not. It's very much a Taylor Swift album. And I was hugely relieved by that. I don't need more folk music, but what I do want to see is Taylor moving forward into a different direction for her that isn't, you know, she's not swerving completely here. A lot of critics will kind of have you believe that she has completely overhauled her sound and that this is, you know, this is the folk album. This is like the big, it's the most personal she's ever written. All of these things kind of keep coming up and up again, or time and time again. But I don't actually think that, I think that this is probably, if you really sat down with what she's been doing with her records since the beginning, but in particular since maybe like Red 1989, this makes complete sense for her to be going this way. You know, like she's not, especially at the time in which she was recording it. Why would you create stadium pop bangers if there aren't going to be any stadiums to play them in? It makes complete sense that she would kind of turn a little bit more quote unquote introspective and quote unquote serious with this record. And
you can't tour, so why not? Like, it's actually very smart in terms of business sense as well.
It
as
is,
musical.
Yeah.
And obviously everyone knows, like, Taylor Swift is known for her business acumen as well. And also, like, it isn't the kind of album that she would have toured, probably. So a perfect time to release it.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that there is, I mean, you mentioned that it's 63 minutes long and it's 16 songs. And that's long, you know, it is probably too long. There is a bit of trimming that could have been done to this, which is usually the case of most albums over 12, 13 songs anyway. I mean, I think the last pop release that I've really loved that was over 12 songs was Lana Del Rey's last record, and that was 13 songs, and it kind of didn't feel it, you know what I mean? Whereas I think 16 songs is a lot. I will also say that of the songs I would trim, there's not a bad song on this record, but not every song is essential, and I think that many of these could have been B-sides. I think we also said something similar about the Haim album, where it seems that pop stars are making the decisions now to include everything on an album, as opposed to kind of really getting to the essence of it and trying to whittle it down a little bit. Having said that, I think that's probably my only criticism, because I actually think that this is a very, very strong move for Taylor. I think that the aesthetic, the drop and the rollout of this album pointed to, you know, that kind of seriousness, but I think Taylor is anything but on this. I think she's being incredibly playful and incredibly creative with language and storytelling. And we know already that she's a brilliant songwriter. But I think here she's really just like, it's not a dour record. It's not really a sad record. It's a record that it really invites you to kind of pore over lyrics, and she's starting to kind of land those turns of phrases a lot better than she did on, say, Reputation. Like, I think that there is that the step away from that reactionary, like, acrimony of Reputation, and then there is a shift towards the more acoustic, guitar driven elements of Lover, as well as the kind of storytelling stuff of her early country albums. And, you know, we don't need another 1989. So it's just, I think if you take a song like Mad Woman on this, I think that is a really, it's really interesting to track that song, which is about sexism and the way that the world views certain types of women, to track that song back to a song like Look What You Made Me Do. There's just so much more kind of growth and maturity, not so much even like it, like, yes, in the stance that she's taking on that, and in the kind of, in what the message is that she's saying, but also there's a growth there in that it's a, like, these are better songs than the songs that are on Reputation, I think. Yeah, okay, that's my initial thought before I go in and any deeper on this. Where are you landing?
Well, I think we've talked before, when we reviewed Lover, I talked about how there's a certain aspect to the music of the likes of Taylor Swift, which is mostly American pop music, which has this kind of brash, earnest sound to it, brash, big melodies, in-your-face melodies, not lacking subtlety, and maybe just the turn of phrasing is quite jarring when you're not around it all the time. And I definitely don't think there's a lot less of that here, and that kind of does also suggest some element of maturity in terms of songwriting. Not that she wasn't a good songwriter already, but it is an interesting idea that she would get in touch with the Nationals, Aaron Dessner, to ask him to produce an album for her. Do you think that overall on this album that collaboration works?
I do, yeah. I think they've worked really well together here. Because you listen through it, and I don't think his presence here is that jarring. I think that if we didn't know, and if it wasn't a huge part of the marketing rollout of this album, if we didn't know that this was her folk album that was produced with members of the National, Bon Iver is on it, I don't know if we would have noticed it, or if it would have been as big a deal. I don't think that the change in direction that she's had is as swift as people think it has been.
Okay, well, there's a lot of songs on here to look at from the other side, coming from, like, the people who have been talking about, oh, I'd never listened to Taylor Swift before, now I'm listening to her because the National are involved, or somebody from the National as well. There are a lot of similarities in terms of musical references and sounds and tones here between this and the National. Like, for example, I play you just this. This is the start of Cardigan.
Vintage tea, brand new phone, high heels on, cobblestones. When you are young, they assume you know.
Okay, and here's the start of Light Years by the National.
Yeah, I had a feeling you'd do this.
And it's interesting from somebody like myself, who's probably more familiar with the National, hearing those kind of things in. She sounds great singing these songs, and she sounds like it totally suits her. And if anything, like of the 16 that are here, I feel like the Jack Antonoff ones are the ones that suffer the most overall. There's the ones in the middle of the album from tracks 5 to 8. Some of them don't really work that well, like mm-hmm. My Tears Ricochet. Mirrorball is fine. The Desner's on does 7. August, I'm not a big fan of that one. There's a lot of very... I don't know. They feel like songs about like that would soundtrack a nice TV show closing number kind of thing.
It's interesting that you say that because one of them, August, Cardigan and Betty are all what Taylor calls the love story trilogy. Is that what it's called? The teenage love triangle trilogy. So they're three songs which follow three characters or a story of infidelity from three different perspectives and from three different points in time, which I actually love. And I don't know if I'd love August as much if it hadn't been for its position with those other two. But I loved that, and I really, really like the references that she is peppering throughout those three songs. The cobblestones, we actually heard somebody walking on cobblestones at the beginning of the clip that you played there. The cardigan, obviously, the car, summer, you know, just all of these kind of thematic sprinklings that you think back and you're like, oh, she mentioned something about that earlier, and then you kind of, you know, put it together, and you've got this story. And I think that's like she's written three chapters of a book there in three decent, you know, alt pop songs, which I just think is lovely. I think it's really, really lovely, and I think it's her really flexing those songwriting muscles. Like I think, you know, when I was listening to Betty, for instance, like I had my hand over my mouth. I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Like he's going to the party. And it was like the feeling you get when you listen to Love Story. Like she's really, really good at kind of putting aside any worry that she's going to come across as corny, and just kind of actually in a way leaning into it. I mean, Betty has a key change at the end when the end of the story is revealed, and I just once I kind of gave myself over to that and to the kind of the lyrics of those three songs, I found myself coming back to the three of them and thinking about them and thinking about those characters a lot, which I found really surprising. I actually Mirrorball is a song that I think is an example of Taylor sometimes over explaining her metaphors, and I found a lot of that on Reputation. I found a little bit on Lover, and I think that Mirrorball could have been better. I'm disappointed it isn't, because I quite like it sonically, but I think
I think just when all those songs come together in the, from tracks 5, they kind of drag a little bit for me. Mm. And then This Is Me Trying, which is funny, like for me, is like I would have thought that's an Aaron Dessner song. It's actually a Jack Antonoff song, because I can imagine Matt Berninger singing that song. It's a song about regret and drinking whiskey, and I'm like, hello, it's a national song, but it's not. So it's interesting just to note the differences musically, just leaving aside lyrics for a second. Okay, well, will we play a bit of August then, just to give you an idea? Okay, that was August. I have a number of questions to ask you then about this record, because I'm interested to hear what your answers are to them. What has most surprised you about this record?
What has most surprised me about this record? It's not cynical, and it's way more of a Taylor Swift record than I thought it was going to be going in. I went in expecting Taylor Swift doing an impression of a folk artist, and thank God that's not what I got. I just got a really decent Taylor Swift album within a really long Taylor Swift album. But yeah, what surprised me is how easily she has fit in with those two different, quite distinctly different producers, and how it still manages to feel like one piece, one consistent sort of sound.
Mm. How do you find the Bon Iver, Justin Vernon collaborations here? Mostly Exile is the main one. I think it's a wonderful song. Sometimes it does feel like it arrives a bit early in the album when I'm listening to it, because he's such a strong vocal, and she's the only other vocalist on the album, really. So it is an interesting, but I love the the duet nature of it, with them both answering each other or responding to each other's statements.
Yeah, I definitely think it's one of the best on the record. It was the song that I immediately assumed was going to be my favorite. Like, when I first listened through the whole album, I was like, yeah, it's the Bon Iver track that really stands out for me. And I think it probably is at the moment my favorite, but I have a feeling that the more time I spend with this album, that might change. I think it's a fantastic example of just a good old fashioned duet done well. Doesn't come across as corny, doesn't come across as, you know, cheesy. And I think that it has a really quite a strong vocal melody in it as well. That's another thing. Her melodies in her vocals throughout this record are really, really strong. There's kind of a little bit less of that kind of staccato ba 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 kind of thing. Definitely, she was doing again around about the time of Reputation. Can you tell that I really didn't like Reputation as an album? But there is less of that, and there's less of that kind of sneer, which I love when she does it right, or I love when she does it kind of knowingly. But it's a much more earnest album, and I think to answer your question about the Bon Iver track, I love it. I really, really love it.
Well, let's hear a bit of that then.
Seen this film before, and I didn't like the ending. I'm not your problem anymore. So who am I offending now? You are my crown. Now I'm in exile, seeing you out. I think I've seen this film before, so I'm leaving out the side door.
So step right out.
Yeah, it's a song that has quite a high emotion to it. I think the duet works really well. The interesting part as well, just like a separate thing, but did you see that whole thing about the credit for this producer? There's two songs on this album that are credited to William Berry as well, and no one really knows who it is. It's quite intriguing. Of course, fans are speculating that it's Harry Styles, who is her ex, and then
why would it be Harry Styles?
Exile, because something to do with that, or because, you know, like, or it's Ed Sheeran. But the funny thing was, Aaron Dessner was asked about this, and he doesn't really know who it is either, so that's kind of why he just says
it might be Taylor, it might just be her, like.
But he just says, no, I don't, when asked if Berry is an alias, I mean, I don't know. She didn't tell me there was a Cardigan video until literally it came out and I wrote the song with her. So I don't know, but I'm pretty sure he's an actual songwriter.
There you go.
So apparently she loves a bit of mystery. So that's it.
She does.
He apparently wrote Betty and Exile as well, whoever William Berry is. And let's talk a bit about the idea here of, so in terms of, how does this stack up to you, or how can you see a true line between this and Lover, for example?
Yeah, I definitely can. I can kind of see I suppose the glean being taken away from Lover, but she was definitely a bit more retrospectively, like retro looking at things. Like she was looking a bit more to the past on Lover in terms of the style of music that she was making. And then here, I think she's doing a similar thing, but she's just looking for inspiration in different places. Like you can tell she's definitely been listening to a lot of folk music, a lot of music that kind of prioritizes storytelling. And I just think that when she puts her mind to a theme, she tends to do it well most of the time. I think this is a better record than Lover. It's her best since 1989, I think. It's such a shame it's so long. Like, it really is.
Okay, well, let's talk about the negatives before we go into the overall positives then. What songs would you take off of this album?
Oh God.
Because I would probably take off My Tears Ricochet, 7, and then Hoax at the end. I feel like that just is one song too many, especially because I can find the other songs have merit, but I find like when you get to Hoax, you're like, I'm all right. I don't really need it. And while there's some others that I don't really love, but you know, if you're talking about turning this into a 10 tracker, I'd probably take off the Antonov ones in general, other than August, and then maybe Hoax. And Epiphany is nice, but you know, I don't know if it needs to be there.
I think you gotta have Epiphany in there for it to be an album of its time, in terms of singing about the pandemic and that. I think you gotta have that in there. I actually quite like that song.
Yeah, actually, I do like it. And I have to say, like, there's a lot, the orchestration on that, the production and arrangement on that. It's so many people like this, you know, we got mellotron, a trombone, a trumpet, cello, got a bit of everything going in there. It is lovely. It is a lovely song.
It's the biggest song on the record. I'd put it in the middle.
Right, yeah. Maybe it should be somewhere else in the track listing as opposed to completely off the track listing. Is there anything else you'd remove or take off there?
I'd keep the one, Cardigan, Last Great American Dynasty, Exile, My Tears Ricochet, 7, August, Mad Woman, Epiphany, Betty. At the moment. Now, granted, those are the songs that I've listened to most when I find myself going back to the album.
Yeah.
Those are the ones I kind of go back to. And maybe I haven't spent enough time with maybe some of the later ones to fully grasp them just yet, but
I'm interested in seeing what you think of this song, Invisible String, because I think it's wonderful.
Cold was the steel of my axe to grind for the boys who broke my heart. Now I send their babies presents. Gold was the color of the leaves when I showed you around Centennial Park. Hell was the journey, but it brought me heaven.
So that song, Invisible Strings.
Did I include that in my track listing there? Because I meant to. Okay, sorry. Yeah, no, that's going on my album.
Yeah, I think it's just a wonderful song. I think it was what I was kind of expecting more from this album, perhaps. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's quite Sufjan sounding. I mean,
It totally is.
As soon as I heard those opening bars of those like plucked strings, I was like, oh, this is very Mystery of Love by Sufjan, which I did not hate at all. I enjoy her within that sound.
It sounds really good. That's what I'm saying, like even when the songs sound a bit nationally, you know, she's well able to do that, and she's fully. She doesn't sound out of place in any way. And
there's,
not that she would,
I think
like it's her
maybe
album.
There's the odd time where it clashes a little bit, and it wouldn't be a whole song. It might just be maybe how she sings a certain turn of phrase or her particular vocalization of a certain phrase. Can from time to time, I think. Yeah, maybe I'm still thinking about Mirrorball, but it can from time to time sound like she's singing over a pop track, but there's a different track being played underneath.
I get. Well, maybe, yeah, that's a case of...
And that's, you know, it's words and phrases.
Too much production as well.
Yeah, it's not entire songs, definitely, but there are some times when I'm like, oh yes, this is Taylor Swift. Like, don't forget that this is Taylor Swift, the pop star. And actually, I think that when she kind of experiments with her vocals a bit throughout it, I really, really enjoy that, because I think we've heard her sing the same way for quite a few pop albums. So it's nice to hear her kind of stretch her vocals a bit, and not in terms of like belting anything out, but just trying new techniques, maybe singing a little bit headier or hitting higher notes or hitting lower notes, and just kind of getting a bit out of her comfort zone, which is nice.
What about the, you know, the idea that maybe there's more mature songwriting going on, in terms of like just by nature of somebody who's getting older, you know, she's not necessarily writing about teenage Romeo and Juliet love anymore all the time.
Oh, but she is. And she wrote three songs about teenage love.
No, but she, yeah, I know, but not all the time. I mean,
sure.
Like there's a line on Invisible Strings where she said, cold was the steel of my axe to grind for the boys that broke my heart. Now I send their babies presents. You know, I think that's just a lovely underpinning of somebody who's aging and, you know, who has had partners and just somebody who's grown up and has experienced life. And I think it's a really, there's a few lovely moments like that, which
there's a line on This Is Me Trying, which is, my words shoot to kill when I'm mad. I have a lot of regrets about that. Which is, I read that as being about the kind of Reputation era clapping back in the press about things, and, you know, writing an album about people who have wronged her. And I thought that showed maturity. But I mean, in terms of, you know, being a more mature songwriter, do anything for as long as she's done it, and you're bound to get better and better. But I think that she has always been one of music's best songwriters. Like, not, you know, and she's proven time and again that she can write obviously amazing pop music, but she's also writing very comfortably in country. She's writing very comfortably in whatever Lover was, and then she's writing here very comfortably in this more folk Americana, very heavily story driven kind of genre. So I think, like, she's getting better and better, and now it's really nice to see her trying new things. And it's not any kind of reinvention. She's not reinvented Taylor Swift. She's just, you know, she put a jumper on and took a picture in the woods. Like, it's not that different to what you're gonna be expecting going in, you know, which I like.
And with that, she created cottagecore chamber pop.
I basically hate all of the, like, talk around this album. I've just removed myself.
You hate
from
the
it.
Discourse.
It's been really toxic online, but
has it?
Oh yeah, yeah. Talk about it off mic. I don't want to bore the listeners.
Overall, then, I mean, going into this, we didn't know where it was gonna land. You're saying this is the best album she's made since 1989.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm saying that as someone who really didn't like Reputation and wasn't that taken by Lover. So, you know, I'm not saying it's as good as 1989 or anything of the sort, but I was disappointed by her two most recent albums, and this one I was really pleasantly surprised with how much I've enjoyed it. And yeah, I think overall there's a couple of really excellent songs in here. There's a good few good songs, and there's a few that maybe should have been B-sides, but that's the way pop music is right now. So yeah, I would recommend, if people don't like Taylor Swift but they like, you know, the National and stuff like that, it would probably be quite interesting to those people to hear Taylor Swift kind of her take on this style of music, because I actually think it works really well. And it's really nice to see Swifties online thinking that Justin Vernon's first name is Bon, that his name is Bon Iver, or Bon Iver. That's really sweet. And I like to think that there's now a lot of like tweeny Swifties going and listening to 22 and Million for the first time. It's worlds colliding.
Pick a song for us there to close out our album.
To close it out, I quite like This Is Me Trying. Did we do that?
So this is Me Trying from Taylor Swift's Folklore. Right, that was our album of the week, Taylor Swift's Folklore. Of course, it is one that I'm sure you will be listening to for much more in the next coming weeks, because it is there's a lot to get into. The 16
and
tracks.
I think it is a grower. If you don't like it the first time, I'd say give it a few more.
Yeah,
listens.
I spent a lot of the week listening to it. I found a lot of things to hold on to here, so I will probably be going back to it myself. So yeah, that's Taylor Swift's Folklore. Okay, time for songs of the week now. We're gonna
hold up.
Oh, you have a can and you're about to open it. And
so there's a popular sparkling water with alcohol brand who everyone's been talking about.
I believe it's called a seltzer.
Yes, an alcoholic seltzer. This is natural lime flavor. I haven't tried these yet and I'm going to try it.
Okay, live on air.
Now. Live on air. This is our,
starting a new podcast segment, trying drinks on air. She's taking a sip. She's looking nonplussed.
Genuinely the most underwhelming experience.
Yes.
Of my entire life. I saw somebody describe this brand as like drinking the static on your TV while someone yells the name of a fruit at you from the next room. I think that's pretty apt. It's fine. It's not wild.
It just reminds me of those flavored waters that you used to get that were like everywhere for a while.
Those like Ballygowan ones.
Yeah. You're like, why would I drink them when I can just drink water? And I feel the same about seltzers. So there we are. And that was the end of our new segment.
Trying new things with Dre.
Okay, time for songs of the week.
Talk about some songs.
Our first song is from Fia Moon. It is called XX. That was Fia Moon. Song is called XX. Dre, I believe you picked this song this week. So tell me.
I did. Little banger. Yeah, really, I really, really like it. Fia Moon is a Irish kind of, I don't know, what would you say? Like
R&B?
R&B, yeah. Pop. Extremely catchy, extremely playable. Does remind me a lot of Summertime Sadness by Lana Del Rey, which I'm not angry about at all, because that's a great song. And yeah, I literally just heard it on a playlist, and I'd been meaning to check. I've seen Fia Moon kind of around on, you know, Twitter, and I've seen people kind of talking about her, and I've never actually just gone and listened to her. So I was really nicely surprised when I looked to see what I was listening to, because I really liked it and saw it was her. So yeah, I think it's, absolute banger. And she's like, she's just kind of seems like a star in waiting, which is really exciting, because we've got a few of them here now, and it's like any day,
yeah, she's
it's
been,
all gonna kick off.
She's great. We've had her play another 9 gig back when we were able to do gigs a couple of years ago. She's a great song called Water Runs Through, and then even earlier this year, Better Days, there's a hook in that's warmed its way into my brain over the last few months, and XX is another one. It does definitely, this reminds me more of the kind of that moody R&B that Banks does, that kind of style. It's like a little bit electronic, a little bit R&B, very pop as well, but yeah, it's a really nice song, and production on it is very, very nice. Now, yeah, our next song is from Angel Olsen, who has a new album out at the end of August. It's called Whole New Mess, and the song is also called Whole New Mess.
Getting back on track when it all fades to black, I'll be getting back on track, back to my head, cleaned up till the time comes. Make a whole new mess again. Make a whole new mess again. Make a whole new mess. Make a whole new mess. Make a whole new mess again.
Okay, that was Angel Olsen. Song is called Whole New Mess. As promised when she released All Mirrors last year, that there would be an album coming out, kind of companion album to All Mirrors. And this is kind of it. So basically, Whole New Mess, it was recorded separately to All Mirrors, but features 9 of the same songs. 9 of the 11 songs of this album are also share ideas and sketches and lyrics with All Mirrors. I think when we reviewed All Mirrors, we weren't really that into it at all. I used to...
I really liked it.
You were. I wasn't.
We disagreed on it.
I never went back to it, and I've struggled with it. But I think, you know, I've always found, like, I love when Angel Olsen does this kind of stripped back simplicity. She's so amazing at it. And like, this whole album seems to be her and her guitar, recorded in an old church, which was converted into a studio by Mount Airy's Phil Elverum and producer Nicholas Wilbur in a small town of in Washington.
All of those things make me happy. Like, yeah, all of the words you just said there are like tick, 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 tick,
yeah,
for me.
So apparently the recording process would just start with them going to get coffee in a local bookstore and, you know, having a bit of a browse and then going and recording an album. So that's what herself and producer Michael Harris did. There was a very good, did you watch the Jimmy Fallon video of this, which is equally, I mean, there's a music video that came out yesterday, but also the Fallon one is great. It's very intense, and it's suitably intense for this kind of song. This is the opening track on the album. So this is one of the two tracks on the album that is a different one than what appeared on All Mirrors. So the opening and closing tracks bookend the album, and they are both new to us. So that's why I added this song to Songs of the Week this week.
Yeah, I while I liked All Mirrors, I'm really, really, really happy to hear this sound from her. I think that she does her best work in this. The lyrics in this song are really, really stunning. And she just, no one else does this kind of like murky, drowsy, really heavy sounding, kind of fuzzy sound like the way she does. And even though you've got all of these layers of fuzz over her vocals, and it's all quite static, much like a white claw, if you will, it's like her, that voice just can't help but breakthrough and just sound like one of the most interesting and unique voices that I've ever heard. I absolutely adore her. I love this song. I cannot wait to hear this album. I'm so excited that's out so soon as well.
Great. As same with myself, as someone who prefers probably like the 2017 follow-up phases to the actual album, Your Woman overall as an album, I'm more excited. I would go back to that more often than I would go back to the album that came before, Your Woman. So or My Woman. Your One. Really looking forward to that.
Your Woman.
All right, our third track of the week is from Alva Reddy. It is called Between Your Teeth. Okay, that was Alva Reddy. Song is called Between Your Teeth. This is the second song we've heard from Alva Reddy's forthcoming album, debut album, which we found out today is being released on Friday, October 2nd. It is called Personal History. Did we discuss Time Difference, the last song that she had out on the podcast? It's very good. It's a very good song, and this is another very good song. I really like the production on this. It's very clean and crisp, but without being too clean and crisp. I believe it is Tommy McLaughlin and a producer called Erland Cooper. So produced by both of those. And as well, she actually announced a gig for October 2nd in the Workman's Club. Fair play to you. I hope that'll work out for you by October. I hope there's gigs back. We'll see.
Yeah, me too.
But you were going to pick this song as well.
See, Matt is playing in October as well. And I'm just like, I really hope I get to go to these gigs. yes, I also just missed out on submitting this song. But yeah, just a really lovely little indie tune, isn't it? Lovely melody. Like you said, I really like that clean and crisp production. I think her voice sounds great. I think that she's got a really good handle on this style of music. So I'm really excited to kind of hear what this sounds like as an album. I think she's it is weird to think that she had that this is going to be her debut, because I feel like I've been listening to her for a while. So it's quite, you know, and it's an anticipated release in a year of a lot of anticipated releases from Irish artists, particularly Irish women, actually. So yeah, really excited for this. I think this is really, really promising.
Yeah, it seems like she is hitting her stride just as the album is coming out. So that's the right place to right situation to be releasing your debut album in, I'd say. Okay, our final track of this week is a spoken word track. I don't know what's going on with spoken word at the moment. It's all the rage for some reason. We have a Lana Del Rey spoken word album this week, which neither of us have heard in full. It is on Audible, that's why. I don't know if I'd be... I had a quick listen to a track. I'm not sure if I'd be into it.
I think I'm going to read it. I think it's either released or she's going to release it as a book of poetry. I think I'll probably... I prefer to do that, I think.
Yeah, that seems more your vibe, I would say.
Yeah.
So this is Soak with in collaboration with Saint Sisters' Gemma Doherty. And then there's an accompanying visual which was conceived by Elias Grace. And this is I'm Alive.
The left paralyzes like a surprise embrace. And I just stand there, stoned and laughing with a stupid look on my face. I grant myself permission to wake up. I tug the blue bread from my ears and hold hands with my depression, acting like a transplant patient testing out new eyes, looking at life as if it were the first time. And it's hard to believe the scene. I'm wide-eyed by the window, in awe at the wonder of simply being. Clouds paint temporary arts on the world's ceiling, and my one-bed apartment feels like a coliseum. For a moment, I can exhale every mistake I've ever made to create space for lessons I've not learned yet. Sugar Rush is like a high to soak up the bitterness in me. At full capacity, I feel pretty, but in a handsome way. When she comes home from work.
So that's I'm Alive from Soak and Saint Sisters, Gemma Doherty. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm not really sure where this came from, other than it seemed to be Elias Grace came with the idea specifically for an antidote to anxiety, I guess, you know, with people having their lives made smaller in the last 6 months, 7 months, then, you know, it makes sense that a lot of people are looking for ways to deal and cope with their anxiety when the anxiety becomes much larger in a smaller, when you're in a closed space. So Soak says Grace came to her with the idea of this, an antidote to anxiety, which led to writing a poem based on finding beauty in the mundane. And then Doherty then wrote this musical score and Kian McKenna shot the accompanying video. This came out today, and not really, I think it's just a once-off, really, just something that happened as a result of close collaborators talking to each other more than anything else.
I really love this. I found this really moving. I listened to it while I was kind of out walking, and I was like properly floored by it. I really, really love it. Nice to see a little reference to Tinseltown in the Rain by the Blue Nile in there. Yes. You don't hear people reference that very often. I encourage people to listen to the whole piece. It's not very long, two or three minutes or something, but it's delivered really beautifully. The poem itself is really like, yeah, it's properly kind of hopeful. I love that line that we just heard there, which says, "I feel pretty in a handsome way." I just think there's a lot of really beautiful turns of phrases in it, crucially in you know, this kind of performed poetry, the score never overpowers it. It lifts it and kind of creates a little world for it to exist within. I really love this. I really recommend people go and listen to it and
very good
feel a little bit better for a minute.
Yeah, it's a surprise, another surprise release we got this week, which was nice. So what else have we been doing? What have you been listening to? Did you pay attention to any of the Mercury Prize albums, the announcement last week?
No, I saw, what's that band? What are they called? Oh, they write about like middle class.
Sports
or
team.
Middle England. Yeah, I saw they got nominated and I was like, I haven't actually heard that band's name in so long.
I'd never seen a picture of them until I had to have a look at it.
They're not a very good band. So yeah, that was very surprising.
Don't seem to be.
I kind of just missed the whole thing about the Mercury Prize.
It was literally the only thing that was happening last week in music. So I was paying attention to it. I'm very happy to see Dua Lipa's album up there because it deserves to be on it. George is Seeking Thrills, Charlie XCX. Anna Meredith's on it. Laura Marling's on it. A band called Porridge Radio, which is a terrible band name, but apparently the album's quite nice. I'm really glad.
The album's great.
Is it?
That Porridge Radio album's really good.
I've made a playlist of all of those albums, so I am going to go listen to them properly at one point. And then Moses Boyd.
If you liked that band last week that I chose, the kind of punky band from LA, what were they called?
Illuminati Hotties.
Illuminati Hotties, yeah. If you like them, you'll probably like Porridge Radio.
Okay, cool. Surprised not to see FKA Twigs on there, and but I'm really glad Michael Kiwanuka's album is on that list because I would say that gives a really good chance of winning it. But anyway, what else have you been watching and listening this week?
I finished The Plot Against America, that HBO Philip Roth series. It's completely excellent. It's just 6 episodes, so you definitely fly through it. But I mean, I said what it was last week, but if anyone wasn't listening, it was a alternative history, basically what if the Nazis had won, and it's told from the point of view of a Jewish family living in Newark. And it's really excellent. It's one of the best television shows I've ever watched. If you liked the it's up there. I love a mini series, do you know? So it's written by the guy who wrote The Wire, so you're in really safe hands. Acting in it is superb as well. And then what else? I've started just kind of watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine again, because I just want to have one of those shows in my life where I don't have to think very much about it, and I've already seen it and it's just really familiar background stuff. So I've been enjoying that. And I ordered the Plot Against America book by Philip Roth, and I also ordered his other book, American Pastoral. Yeah, not very much media this week. It's been a lot of Taylor Swift. I'm going back and listening to older Taylor Swift albums and those kind of early country albums as well, which has actually been a lot of fun.
Okay, very good. It's been Taylor Swift listening mostly, or Phoebe Bridgers I've been listening to a lot. Also, Crying Bean, that album, Mordecai, that came out a few weeks ago. A really lovely summer album. I bought it on vinyl there today, and I actually just bought the Salt album on vinyl because I feel like that's one worth owning. I did that. On Monday night, I went to the cinema, as we discussed last week.
Yes, you'll have to tell us everything now.
It was great crack. I mean, it was like the opening night or a reopening night of The Lighthouse. So I went to see The Empire Strikes Back, one of my favorite films. And it turns out I didn't realize it, but I'd never seen it in the cinema before. My dad brought me to see Star Wars in the screen cinema with my sister when I was about 6 or 7, I'd say, maybe not even. And I'll always remember that. And it would start off my Star Wars obsession. And then when the opportunity came up last week to go back to the cinema, I was like, oh, that'll be a lovely thing to do. And it was actually really nice. It didn't feel like it was very empty the way that, you know, they're socially distanced. I'd say we were on one row and there was 4 people like 3 seats down, kind of thing. But I don't think there was anyone in the row in front of us or behind us at all. So that's how they do it, and we were in screen too, so it wasn't that many people. I'd say it was like 40 or 50, I'm not sure exactly.
Lovely. But that's, it was the dream when you go to the cinema.
Yeah, it was really nice. I really enjoyed it. Just really nice to go, be able to go somewhere again that isn't, you know, necessarily a pub either, so that was really nice. And I also last night I noticed that it was on my list for a while because I'd been thinking about it. I noticed that the No Popcorn podcast were talking about 24-hour party people and Control. So I watched the former last night because I always felt like it was really good, and then I wanted to see if it was. It does hold up in terms of its, like, it's a romp about Manchester. Steve Coogan's great in it. It's interesting watching people's depictions of the likes of Sean Ryder and Ian Curtis, while some of the film isn't brilliant in terms of how it's shot and set up, but it is quite an enjoyable film about the Manchester music scene.
I haven't seen that 90s. Since I was in college, I think. It's been a long time since I've watched 24 Hour Party People.
Like, Steve Coogan playing Tony Wilson, he's a perfect man to play somebody like that, who Tony Wilson seemed to be a larger than life character. He basically narrates the film as Tony Wilson, and then the real Tony Wilson's is there at one point, you know what I mean? So it's that kind of stuff. There's a lot of famous Manchester musicians in it as well, but also the depictions of it. I really enjoyed it. I haven't seen it for a long time, as I said, but some of the music in it, like, it's particularly when they're in Factory and you're hearing some of the old house classics that, like, Dave Haslam and Mike Pirking would have played, you're like, because they're actually in the film as well, the DJs. That's when I really felt like, oh, I just love to be in a club. I just love to be there. Because, you know, there's a particular feeling of hearing music in a space when other bodies are there, and the reverb and the way things, you know, the vibrations of it. And you're like, that's what I'm really missing right now. So that's, I lived vicariously through the film in that regard. So I really enjoyed it. And that's pretty much it for me. I've been taking a break from The Sopranos at the moment. And that's it. That's all I'm at for cool. now. So I have a load of films on my list to watch, but I'm not in any rush to watch them. And and because of the Star Wars thing, I was listening to a podcast called Newcomers, which my friend Anna recommended to me, which is basically Lauren Lapkus, comedians Lauren Lapkus and Nicole Boyer had never seen Star Wars, so they watch all of the Star Wars films together, and then I think they do it in like a very short amount of time, and then get a guest in to discuss it with them. And it's really interesting because they're like, the first one they're just like, I hate this, and then by the by the third episode they're like, I love this. So it's just been interesting, you know, bit of
that's cool
fun, I know, fun Star Wars, and then obviously it goes into the prequels and everyone's like upset, and so it's like reliving the trauma in real time of people who are watching Star Wars for the first time. But it is very enjoyable, and I've been enjoying that. So yeah, that's my recommendations this week. So that's it, episode 100. We are done, and thank you all for sticking with us for 100 episodes, and here's to 100 more.
I'm not good at being all sappy, but thanks everyone. It's really nice that you are listening to us 100 episodes in, and please keep listening to us, because we're going to keep doing this.
We're going to keep doing it whether you're listening or not.
So it'd be nice if you were there. It's nice to have you every week, and people do get in touch with us and they DM us, and we have like this kind of dialogue with some of our listeners, which is I find really enjoyable. So keep doing that.
Continue to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right.
Thanks, guys.
That's great. That is our episode 100 down. We're going to finish. Thank you, Dre. Thank you to the patron subscribers as well for helping us get this far. And we're going to finish with a song from a guy called Fawza, who is a young Irish producer called Luke O'Brien, who had a song out on the Kitsune label in Paris last week. This is called Mirage. Thank you all. See you for 101 next week.
Bye. Something. even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinis.
I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.